Good morning, everyone. I'm Jim. I'm a compulsive overeater and a food addict. Yes, actually, I was going to open with that because, like, thank God they let men back in because I would have been screwed royally. So I have had, going back, I remember being put on my first diet when I was 7. I remember going to the doctor and my parents were like, he's too fat, he needs to lose weight. And that would be my childhood and my wife. It was always, why are you so fat? Why can't you stop eating? And I look back at pictures and I'm like, well, I wasn't as big as they were saying I was, but I was bigger than the rest of, I'm one of 6 kids, so I was bigger than the rest of my siblings. And I seemed to be the only one who went to the food. And I did this throughout my life and my childhood, and I battled depression since I was that young, and I've been in and out of therapy since I was 14. Like someone else shared, it's like I've been suicidal many times in my life. And the first time I was suicidal was I was 18. I was out of school. I couldn't get a job. Couldn't get hired at Dunkin' Donuts. And I just thought I'd be better off dead than having to tell anybody about my sexuality, to tell anyone I was gay. And I came very close to killing myself. But I confided in someone and I got back into therapy once again. And even after that, I found, you know, food wasn't doing it enough for me. So someone has always said I went better living through chemistry, and I found other addictions to drown in with alcohol and drugs. And I spent my 20s that way. And I don't remember a lot of my 20s. I don't remember the 1980s in a whole. The Berlin Wall came down and I didn't know that. Life just went away. I look back and I don't remember a lot of that time. And because I was putting on so much weight, my highest weight was 535 pounds. So that's about 300 pounds from where I am now. And by just continuing putting on this weight, I was destroying my body. And I was living the effects of this. And not only that, but genetic issues. And I had thyroid cancer that wasn't from the weight, but then I had congestive heart failure. And just any kind of disease you want to mention, I probably have suffered from it. And my life just continued like this, and my parents died within 4 months of each other, and it was just, everything just kept snowballing around me, and I could not cope without food. You know, the alcohol and the drugs kind of took a back seat, but the food was the only thing that made me feel better, or so I thought. And it got to a point in 2010, and I had congestive heart failure again. And this time I was alone in my apartment, and I couldn't breathe, and I was so delusional, I thought I could drive myself to the hospital. And I stood up, and I almost passed out. But I didn't. I called an ambulance, and the most embarrassing thing about that is that it took 7 people to lift me into the ambulance. Because they had to call the special ambulance for me, which is mortifying enough. But they said to me, if I had passed out, I would have died because I was that close to death. And I had to get I had to go in and get further testing done, and I could only go into New York because there was no table in New Jersey that would take me. There was no hospital in New Jersey that would do the procedure on me. And they're saying, we don't think you're going to make it through the procedure. And I was diagnosed with moderately severe heart disease. And how did I cope with this? I ate. I think I ate more when I came home from that test than I had done before. And it was a binge that went from November of 2010 till July of 2011. Because I just could not stop. It was, my family was after me. It was battles with everybody. Like, what is wrong with you? And I couldn't really tell them. And I can look back now and I can say I didn't care whether I lived or died. I just didn't. It didn't matter to me. And I wasn't going to do anything to save my life. I didn't care enough. And so in July of 2011, I had another medical emergency, and I went in, and this doctor looked at me, who was fat, by the way, and he said, your whole problem is you need to weigh 190 pounds. And he walked out of the office, and he never examined me, and he never helped me. And I left, and I was so mortified and upset that I stopped at the nearest fast food restaurant and bought as much food as I could with the money I had in my wallet, and I shoved it in my face as I went home. And then I was like, I was done, and I like, I need to find some place. And I looked for rehab places, and the only rehab place inpatient I could find were in Florida or the Midwest. And it's like, at 500 pounds, I'm not getting anywhere. And I found this outpatient rehab center in Manhattan. And I went in, and I never did anything for 4 months in the beginning of that year. I'd never left my apartment. I got to the point where I was just becoming a recluse. I wouldn't do anything. I wouldn't talk to people. And I went in, and I met this woman, and she looked at me, and she said, "You have a disease." Now, no one in my 46 years had said to me that this wasn't my fault. I had heard that it was my problem, what's wrong with you? And she was the first person that said this to me. So I trusted her, and I've learned in the big book, she was another addict. And you can tell when another addict is talking to you because you can hear it. And so I started going to this program, and part of being in there is you have to be in a 12-step fellowship. Now, I knew about OA for about 20 years, but refused to go because of the word God in the steps. Mm-hmm. I wanted nothing to do with God. I wanted nothing to do with religion of my upbringing. I had massive issues with it for many reasons. And I had to go because I knew this is where I belonged. So I went to my first OA meeting, and I tell them all the time, I hated it. Oh my God, I hated it. I hated everybody in the room. Somebody tried to hug me. Oh my God, it was awful. It was awful. And the second week, I got locked in the bathroom. It just was like, but I kept going. And I was telling somebody a couple weeks ago that there are people that I know from that. They used to call me the angry man because I was not friendly. I didn't talk to anybody for the first 4 months in program. And I apparently gave up the vibe of do not come anywhere near me. And thank God there was a woman in program who, referringly called her a drill sergeant. She just basically started telling me, you need to do service. She's like, you're going to do this. And I was like, okay. And that's how I started. She introduced me to my first sponsor. And you know, I got physical recovery rather quickly. The emotional and spiritual didn't come as easily. And I worked through the steps. We did writings and we did all that. And it wasn't the same. I went through my first fourth step and it really didn't, I don't know, I didn't get from it what I thought I was going to get from it. And I went along and life was great and I was feeling good and I did many things. I jumped out of a plane because I thought it'd be fun. I just was out living life and having a great time, but there was something missing. There was something seriously missing. And two summers ago, what is this? This is 2018. So in 2016, I was in an emotional, and I was just an absolute mess. And all of my sobrieties were in jeopardy because I was just like, I was crazy. I was absolutely crazy. And I was driving everybody around me crazy because all I could talk about was this one thing, this one obsession. It wasn't food. It was a person. And I just could not stop talking. And I was making myself sick. And a good friend of mine said, you know, there's this meeting in Belleville. You really should probably go to that. So I came here. And I was just like, it was a whole new world. It was just like, no other meeting that I had gone to talked about the big book. No, it was just amazing to me. And I needed a sponsor at this time. And so I was terrified to talk to anybody in here. I was intimidated for some reason. And so I finally went up and I asked someone to sponsor me. And she said yes, and the first thing she said was, you need to get a brand new copy of the big book. I said, I have one, and she looked at me and said, you need to get a brand new copy of the big book. And I'm like, that was my first lesson in doing what I'm told and listening. And we started going through the steps, and as outlined in the big book, and I have to tell you, it was just a totally different experience than the first time. I read it myself, and then we read it together, and I swear, every time we read it, I saw something that I had never seen before. It's just amazing. And even coming here every week, it's like, I don't remember that line from the big book. And we went through all the steps. And, you know, and I've told the story before about the third step. And we were in a diner. And she's like, I don't really think you want to kneel in the diner, but we need to kneel and say the third step prayer. I said, no. So we went out and we knelt in the back of her car and held hands and said the third step prayer. And I had just said, I'm willing to go to any lengths to do this. How can I say no? And I couldn't. And it was like the beginning. It was just really the beginning of a change that I was feeling. And I hadn't even gotten to the fourth step yet, and it was Thanksgiving of 2016. And I'm also an incest survivor. And that Thanksgiving morning, I woke up and I'm like, I don't want to hate him anymore. And it was gone. And I just felt like this, the only way I can do this blackness that was in my soul was just gone. And it was amazing. And I went to a meeting that morning, and we were in the temple, and I swear, as I was talking, the sun was shining, and I felt I felt such a powerful presence in that room. It was unbelievable. And it was a beginning, because I had never thought, when I first started, there was forgiveness was nothing I was ever interested in. And I continued working on the steps, and I went to a retreat, and I heard something that stuck with me, is that forgiveness is letting go of the hope of a better past. And that so stuck with me, and I've heard it so many times since in all different places from different people. And it's taken me a lot of time and a lot of work, and we're going through, and I did my fourth step, and you know, it's very interesting when you do your fourth step, it's like it's all about your part. I just want to talk about how they harmed me. But that's not what it is. I had to, and so even just a few months ago, I was sitting and I was talking, and it's like, I forgive him. It's gone. It's like, it is the greatest gift I've received. I received many gifts in program. And it is just gone. And it's not about the other person. It's about me. Because I have a freedom from that, that it doesn't matter. It, you know what? I've come to a point where I can accept everything about my past and be okay with it. It's just an amazing experience, and the only thing I can say is that it's working the steps. Because if it wasn't for working the steps, I don't know where I would be. All my doctors told me I would be dead by the time I was 40 if I didn't take care of myself. That was 13 years ago. It's like it's a miracle that I'm alive. And so I do everything, I do my best to live every day the best that I can. And I just continue to do what I'm told, for the most part. It was very interesting because I've been told by my sponsor all the time, never say no to service. And I saw someone at a meeting yesterday, and he was asked to speak at the last minute, and he looked at me and he goes, well, you know, someone always said to me, never say no to service. And I'm like, well, I don't know where you heard that from. But it just keeps continuing. It's an amazing thing when you see stuff like growing in other people. And I'm just so ever grateful for the experience. And I get up every day and I say the third and seventh step prayer, and I have to remember not to be a selfish person, because my default is just to be selfish and not really want to do anything for anybody. But it's like, if I'm not there for somebody else, like so many people have been there for me, that's not right. I have to be there for people. And it's amazing. And you know, even in recovery, I've had a lot of issues. I had a stroke in recovery. I had hernias last summer, but I'm still here. I'm still kicking, and I just do the best I can every day. And I'm not saying that there are not days where I have bad days or it's rough, but I have the capability of dealing with that now without having to turn to the food, without having to pick something up, because it's not the answer. And working with others has been an amazing thing, because my sponsor, when I would call up and I'd be so upset about something, she said, hang up the phone, call three people, talk to three people, then call me back and hang up the phone. And I'm like, I want to talk about me. I don't want to talk about other people. So I would do that. And let me tell you something. It's amazing how that really stops that little hamster wheel from spinning in your head, is just being there for somebody else. And yeah, that's it. That's all I have to say.